Welcome to episode 21 of Talking Impact Investing, a podcast about impact investing, ESG factors, and sustainability in business. I'm your host, Matej Suchets. The main topic of this episode is impact investing, and we are joined by the right person to talk about it. The special guest of this episode has a background in traditional financial services, if you will, and later in his career became impact investor. I'm not going to sell you short on his story, as this is one of the first things that we discuss in the episode, but I'm going to say this. Investing, which was once driven by fear and perhaps greed, through impact investing for him became driven by joy and freedom, and that is very powerful. We are joined by Jeff Schaefer, who's a co-founder and CEO at Common Good Capital. Among other things, in this episode, we talk about how one might define impact investing. We touch on the areas of focus of impact investments for common good, hence the title, Impact Investments from Forestry in Pacific Northwest to Renewable Energy in Africa. And we also discuss some of the changes in the space of impact investing from Jeff's experience since he joined it. Without further ado, let's dive right in. Hi, Jeff. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me. Grateful to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to hearing more from you. So maybe for starters, why don't you tell us more about your story and how you got involved with impact investing?
I'll try to make this high level, short and sweet, but graduated from college in 96 of a college called Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois, and ended up working for a couple years for a company by the name of Van Kampen American Capital, which today is owned by Invesco. So started out in the mutual fund world, unit investment trust world, which if your listeners aren't familiar with what we call UITs, it actually was the precursor to ETFs. And then I switched to an alternative investment company and had a 20-year career there. Ended up going from Chicago to Oregon to Southern California and then to Orlando, the home office, and really was at the forefront of watching this transition from investors who were kind of asking the question or advisors asking the question of, do you really need anything other than anything in your portfolio other than stocks and bonds in alternative investments? Well, I watched that industry firsthand go from roughly, I think in 2000, about $750 million of capital that was raised. Today, and I don't know the exact numbers, it's probably close to $100 billion that will come in this year in alternatives. So I watched that radically change, and I was had the opportunity to be an executive of a company called CNL in here in Orlando, Florida. But it was cutting to the chase. It was about 10 years ago when I was 40. I was the president of CNL Securities. We would put together huge portfolios of real estate assets in the form of REITs, for if you're familiar, your investors or listeners are familiar with that. And we probably did 8 or 9 different flavors, so to speak. And then we also were raising capital and creating business development companies, which is similar to REITs, except instead of investing in real estate, you are loaning capital to private companies. It was a back surgery that metaphorically and literally put me on my back. And I would say it was the first time in my first 40 years of life that I was really forced to be still, or at least in the previous 20 years of my career, I was forced to be still. And it was in literally almost after I woke up after back surgery, I could feel the adrenaline leaving my body. And my desire to be doing what I had been doing as an executive was almost gone. And there's a whole story and journey around that. But about 5 weeks after my back surgery, I was sitting on my couch at home. I still was working, but I was sitting on my couch at home, and I plugged in a DVD. that was it was about an investment opportunity in the affordable housing space. But when I watched it, two things struck me. Number one was the competitive returns that could be generated in affordable housing. Number two is two residents spoke for all of 15, 30 seconds. It was a video of them speaking about what it was like living in these communities prior to this group buying them, infusing it with capital, fixing it up, and then changing the management who really cared about the residents. And one of the residents said, "They've given my dignity back." And I remember being like, "Wow." And another one was like, "I'm so excited to have people come to my house." And I would say at that moment, the light bulbs went on for me. And you got to understand, in my career, I'd been involved with probably $25 billion worth of real estate transactions. But the light bulb went on for me that if I'm going to continue to be a part of this whole financial services, this investing, I want to do it in a way that it's something I'm passionate about and care about. And so my wife and I ended up making that investment into this, into the fund, actually performed exactly like they stated, which is typically it's unique because most of the time investments either do better or worse than what you think. But anyways, it performed, it's a point. And then I would say that's through that experience is my wife and I started to see not only the returns that were being generated for us, but how our capital was being used to transform the physical place and the community for which these residents lived. And this is where it gets a little bit touchy-feely. The normal emotions of investing that we hear about are fear and greed. If you haven't heard it, Wall Street's driven by fear and greed. And what I would say is my wife and I really started to experience not so much fear and greed. We actually started to experience some joy and freedom around the cat around our investment capital. And so that ultimately was the catalyst that then I decided to leave as an executive and to go figure out this whole space of impact investing. And then, you know, to today, common good, that's what we do. So sorry for the long story, but that gives you a background into how and why we got into impact investing.
Yeah, what a great story. And you sort of alluded to, making the impact for others while also generating the returns and how that brings joy and some sort of freedom or feeling of freedom. But how would you define impact investing?
Yeah, so we could talk about this for a long time. I would tell you there are real definitions of what impact investing is. Those that are deep in this space, there's generally, well, those that are deep in the space know what impact investing is. And you already stated it. It's this idea of not only investing for financial return, but you're also investing for non-financial return or impact, usually around social matters, environmental matters, and then really impact investing got started in the faith community, and so some also put a faith component around it. But I would tell you the key is it is actually measuring, reporting on outcomes, and then look, not always do you get the outcomes you want, so then it's trying to adjust and modify or do whatever you can to actually get the not only the financial outcomes but also the non-financial. One last thing, the real discussion, and this is generally people who are tiptoeing into the space still, and I don't mean that arrogantly. There's this debate around terminology, ESG, impact, sustainability, and I would generally say in this deep in the space, ESG is akin to more so public securities, not 100%, but generally. And it's more about processes and procedures around environmental, social, and governance. Impact investing, I believe, goes one step further. Generally, it's referring to private market investments. And the reason is as a private market investor, you usually control that strategy, that asset. And you can influence it way more than a public company. And then usually what it the impact part of it is having it's about measuring and reporting on outcomes, which is not necessarily the case with ESG. It doesn't mean that they don't work together, but those are some of the nuances to the definition. So hopefully I didn't kill that, but that is the debate that you'll see out there. And frankly, a lot of people still are kind of confused, but it's when you dig into it, it's actually not that complicated.
Absolutely. And I think you laid it off well, so it's easy to understand. Picking up where we left with common good capital, can you tell us more of what regions, what sort of products you invest in, and what's the impact you're looking to achieve?
Yeah, so common goods capital and common goods securities, that's a regulatory body that we need to create to do this. What we have decided to do, our niche is we don't single-handedly have our own investment funds and go long in those funds. Instead, where the opportunity that we see and that we've been going after is that there are a bunch of different asset managers in this broader impact space. And yet and so they've got an expertise, but actually raising the capital to deploy is this, there's a huge gap, this missing link. So what we do is often partner with asset managers who have these defined track records and strategies. And then we due diligence them, run them through our own process and to the extent that it fits all of the due diligence criteria, and we think there would be interest, then we take that to wealth advisors all across the United States. So we've done, I think we've worked with 9 different managers. It's all up on our website. It's something like this. 9 different managers, 15 different funds. We've raised over $100 million. We actually have a private REIT. We do some consulting. So to now answer your specific question, we've done anything from climate smart forestry in the Pacific Northwest, which is essentially investing in forest or timberland, not simply for the harvesting value, although that clearly is part of the strategy, but it's also unlocking value other ways than just cutting the timber down. For example, even just allowing the timber to grow a little bit bigger, ironically and literally. The bigger the trees get, the more value they become, not only because they're bigger, but actually they can be produced, they can be harvested and produced into things that have more value than if you were just to, chip them up and make, paper or whatever. But there's also unique strategies around that that have been created where you can find capital, conservation type capital that wants to come in and kind of fix these properties and help them out. So we've done that all the way to we're doing several things in Africa. We're doing some renewable energy in East Africa. So half of Africa, 600 million people. I mean, yep, you almost got to sit on that for a second. That's almost twice the size of the United States does not have access to power. And the downstream impact to that and for the lives of these individuals, it's stuff that you and I take for granted. Maybe we don't take it for granted the week that we don't have power here in Florida. But imagine running a business. In fact, I was in Africa, a creamery, yogurt. How do you run a company when you don't know if you're going to have power to keep this stuff refrigerated by the time you ship it out? That goes in, and it impacts education, it impacts healthcare. So there's a little niche where we're out there buying what's called small scale renewable projects. And what it is it's bringing power to parts of Africa that historically don't have it. Interesting enough, it's not just the fact that it's renewable, which is interesting. It's also that the renewable piece, so not only good for the environment, but it's also the most economical option in those areas. So it really is a win-win. A couple other things, we do affordable housing. We do affordable housing here across the United States, or we partner with people who do. Massive need for lower income and even more moderately priced housing. And I could get into a whole diatribe on that, but we're helping in that space. And then one of my deep passions, which we have not commercialized yet, but we are internally investing in it. Predominantly with just my capital, my wife and myself's capital, And that is investing in businesses that are run by or that hire formerly incarcerated men and women or politically correct returning citizens. And so we do all kinds of stuff. I'm missing a bunch of it, but just a smattering of some of the things that we do and what we have done, that gives you an example.
Thank you for sharing. This was very interesting. And I think just this story when you were describing, how would you run a creamery if you had no power? It just makes you think.
Yeah.
So thank you for all those insights. Perhaps the next question. So Common Good was co-founded by you in 2017. Since in about 7 years or so, the industry have changed. You have, I imagine, faced some challenges and overcome them. Could you talk about some of those?
Well, I'm going to give you a story. So when I went and told our CEO, my previous company, who I reported to, that I was going to leave to go do impact investing. And this guy's a friend, great guy, high morals. His comment to me, and I don't even think he remembers it, but his comment to me was, "Jeff, I question your theology." And I didn't, at the time, I wasn't in a space where I was even going to argue because I really didn't care. And I'll just say this individual who I just mentioned actually is doing some impact investing themselves today. And this individual was a longtime Wall Street investment banker. And so just that snapshot alone tells you a little bit of the progress where, and I would say a lot of it is just misunderstanding. And like anything, you can take impact investing and you can make it highly political. You can make it all about risk mitigation. And you're going to find, and you can find it can be just about aligning your values. There's this whole spectrum of why people do that, why people do impact investing. And so I would say generally there's been a greater awareness about impact investing. I also think with COVID, I mean, and I could diatribe on this for a long time, but I think COVID, the social unrest, if you actually go back to then, remember Kobe Bryant passed away. There was just a lot going on in that window. And I think what it did is it sparked people's desire to be a part of the solution, whatever the problem that people perceived in their brain. So the political unrest. You know, whatever side you sit on, people are kind of like, why are we fighting about this stuff? Why can't we get along? And then COVID hits and it's like, holy cow, what happened in China or wherever across the globe is impacting me today. And then, you know, Kobe Bryant, the superstar, wait, he dies. And so we're all starting to grasp to go, we're only here for a finite piece of time. And so how do we make a difference? And here's what the world is realizing. The world is realizing through, I think, a lot of these things that charities, while unbelievable contribution to society, candidly, they own a fraction. They control a fraction of the capital in the world. And they're non-sustainable in the sense that so people have to constantly give to them for them to function. Go on the other side. Governments, and I don't care where you reside in a political standpoint, most people, if not everybody, recognizes governments don't produce anything. And governments are not innovative, creative venues that you want solving problems. Just go to COVID. Where do we go when we needed a vaccine? We didn't go to governments. We partnered with the experts in the for-profit world and actually partnered and came up with real solutions. So here's what the world is recognizing. The money is in business and it's in investments across the globe. And so what's happening is that, and this is an interesting thing that you're going to see play out, the world is trying to figure out how they influence and allocate capital based on the way they, whoever they is, determine what is good. And so I think what we need to do right now is we need to have more discussions about how do we define good? Because look, most people want to leave this place a better place than when they when they leave. But your definition of good may be different than my definition of good. And I would say I do think there's probably more, I mean, I'm using this hypothetically, even if you and I disagree on stuff, I bet you there's a lot more things we agree on than disagree on. And so that's really starting to play out, and has been over the last 7 to 10 years. One last comment I would give you is capital. We're in this great wealth transfer right now. Whatever the exact numbers are, you see differing numbers, but I'm going to use a number that's published. About $80 trillion is expected to transition from the oldest generation to the next generation here over the next 25 years, starting about now. What we do know is that women will be big inheritors of that, as will the next generation. And they generally care about and want to figure out how to align their investments with their values. So we're in the early innings of this transition. I actually think this will be a massive wave that will continue. I also think that you may eventually start to even lose some of the terminology, because I think there's going to be just a greater sense that, you know what, where possible, with and candidly, without getting away from capitalistic principles, how do you infuse this values component? How do you infuse how this capital is impacting the common good and have all that interplay together? I think is what we're going to see play out over the next, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So I don't know if I answered your question, but those are some of the things that I would say.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Thank you. In the interest of time, I have a question that I want to ask you, and I'm really eager to hear your answer. So, Jeff, you have your own podcast called A New Lens with Common Good Capital. We'll
Yep.
the description. The link into description for anybody that wants to check it out. Some great episodes, great guest speakers there. And so, with over 50 episodes speaking on topics of impact investing, ESG, different business aspects, what would be some of your biggest takeaways that you had from those conversations?
Yeah, I got to tell you, first of all, so I'll be 50 later this year. And so we were sitting with my team maybe 3 years ago now, and the younger generation is like, oh, you should do a podcast. And I'm like, no, that's the last thing I want to do. But I will tell you, it's actually been a highlight of Common Good. And I think here's why, to answer your question. Number one, everybody has a story, and everybody has a story worth listening to and learning from. And so that's the first part of all of our episodes. It's just hearing people's story. Frankly, it's the way you opened it up with this. It's hearing people's stories. And then from there, I really ask two main questions. I ask multiple questions, but the two main questions I'm really getting at is, when did you realize the power of capital, and what does it mean to you? And then I think on the opposite side of that is, what does stewardship mean to you? And so, in doing that, I've obviously interviewed a bunch of really interesting people. But here would be some common things that I'd say. Number one, humans long for meaning and purpose. And it's very clear that just acquiring money or assets doesn't ultimately bring meaning or purpose. And usually there's a point in everybody's life when they realize that. And so if I were to characterize it, people find meaning oftentimes through faith, and usually it's awe, faith, community, and service. And so when you combine that notion then with this idea that how powerful capital can be, you're hearing from these guests the amazing work that when you combine this service stewardship mentality with capital, how it can do two things. Number one, it can make a massive difference in the lives of those capital, for the lives of who that capital is being allocated to. So in the case of, my desire for working with men and returning citizens who are formerly incarcerated, have a background, you can imagine when we get to invest in them, the capital, it gives them a shot, let alone hopefully investing more than just capital. But here's the other side of the equation that I don't think many people talk about, and it frankly, it's what drives me more so than anything. And that is whether it's nonprofit work or whether it's in investing, what we know is where you invest, where you give, where your capital goes, your heart is going to follow. And so how do you start to change the world? How do you start to change our culture? One simple way is to be connected from an investment perspective of how you're investing. And in fact, so go to what I call Redemption 360, which is investing in returning citizens. The vision that I have, if I can get thousands of people to invest in a fund that is investing in these businesses and changing the lives of these individuals, then I'm also going to change the hearts of those thousands of investors towards these men and women who have a criminal background. And ultimately, whatever laws you change or however you change the system, you got humans implementing it. So I want to change as many human hearts towards these individuals. And I think one of the best ways to do that is to partner with them, have them make you money. You get to experience that journey with you. And oh, by the way, lest a guest says, "Oh my gosh, you're just using these men and women." No. I've been in prison for 30 years, in and out. I mean, not in and out from a criminal standpoint, but visiting. And you know what these men and women want? They want a chance and they want somebody to believe in them. Let me tell you what, when you look them in the eye and say, "I believe in you, and because of that, I'm going to write you a check for your business," and they're viewed as an equal human being, the validation that gives them is off the charts, even though some would say, "Oh, just give them some money." And there is a place to give them money, but there's also a place to say, "Nope, I believe in you. I believe you can make money, and I'm going to be along that journey with you." So those are just some of the overall comments I'd make to the podcast. To the extent that your guests would love to listen to it, there's some amazing guests. All I'm doing is interviewing, but there's some amazing guests. And really what we're trying to do is inspire people to think differently about the way they invest and just the power of capital as a whole. And you can define power capital as money. You can define it as your time. You can define it as your talent. There's a lot of ways to do that. But I do think you'll find real meaning the more that you are looking outside of yourself and figuring out how to align your values with those around you.
Jeff, thank you so much for this conversation today, for your time and joining Talking Impact Investing. We're going to leave the links to Common Good Capital and your podcast in the description for those that want to further check it out. And I wish you best of luck in the future.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your leadership in having this podcast, and looking forward to seeing your career and how you make a difference, not only in the lives of your family, but also for others. So appreciate your leadership on this.
Thank you for staying with us until the very end. You can stay up to date with the upcoming episodes by subscribing. And if you found any useful information, feel free to leave a 5-star review and follow Talking Impact Investing Podcast on social media.